My name is Roosevelt. I always thought that cigarette smoking just messed up your lungs. I never thought that at only 45 would give me a heart attack. I never thought that it would stop me from playing basketball with my kids. And I never thought that it would change my life forever. My tip is, do your heart a favor and quit now.
Heart attack risk drops as soon as you quit. For free help, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and CDC.
Blog Talk Radio. Now, coming to you live from Fort Lauderdale Executive Airport in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, it's Plain Talk Radio, a talk show dedicated to promoting an appreciation and understanding of business aviation, hosted by Stuart Lapayoker. It's Plain Talk Radio.
Okay, welcome to Plain Talk Radio for Thursday, October 14th, 2010. I'm your host, Stuart Lapayoker, coming to you live from Fort Lauderdale, as we'll do biweekly at around the same time. We've got a great show for you today. Joining us is Mike Nichols of the NBAA, Frank Polk of McAfee and Taft, to talk about the top issues facing business aviation today. So be sure to enter the chat room on your screen or give us a call with your questions or comments using the numbers you see on your screen or our toll-free number, 877-511-1032. Or if you've registered at Blog Talk Radio, you can click to talk or Skype us. We'll also be talking to Peter Fleiss of the Corporate Angel Network. You can add us to your iTunes from the Blog Talk Radio, Plain Talk Radio page and follow the show schedule using some widgets on the page that will drop the show onto Outlook and other software. We'll be at NBAA for the convention the week of the 18th, next week, and we'll be interviewing some of the attendees, which will be taped for broadcast. So we hope you'll listen in to the next broadcast, which will give us a sense of the state of the market, of the markets and new developments, and hopefully be a lot of fun. If you have a new product or service that serves the business aviation community and would like to be interviewed at NBAA, drop us a note at airplaneguy@plaintalkradio.com. A couple of quick notes. The advertising you see on the Blog Talk page is included by Blog Talk Radio. We don't control that content or endorse any of those advertisers. We do, however, have some space on our page for some promos. So if you have something you'd like to appear on the Plain Talk Radio page, feel free to drop us a note. We'll give you the specs that you need to promote your business or product, and that's no charge, at least for now. Please note that although the show may touch upon legal, tax, or regulatory issues, nothing contained in the broadcast should be relied upon as legal advice appropriate to your situation, which can only be given by your own legal counsel. And the opinions you hear of our guests represent their personal views, not necessarily those of any particular organization. Our next show will air on November 1st. We'll have an interesting guest on the show, a retired Secret Service agent who used to be in the President's protective detail, several of the President's protective detail, in fact. We'll be talking about security and the kind of planning your flight department can do. We're also working on interviewing someone that I feel has become somewhat of a living legend in the business. So hopefully you'll join us for that. But first, let's talk with Mike Nichols of NBAA. I know him as the staff liaison to the NBAA Tax Committee that keeps our noses to the grindstone, but he has other responsibilities at NBAA. And also Frank Polk of McAfee and Taft and Peter Fleiss of the Corporate Angel Network. Gentlemen, welcome.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Stuart.
Mike, let's talk about what you feel are the top three or four issues or challenges facing business aircraft owners, operators, and others for 2010 and 2011.
Well, Stuart, as you know from your practice, there are a whole host of regulatory and operational topics that we could get into in great detail, but I want to focus on a couple today. The most important one affects every single operator of business aircraft in the United States, and that is the image of business aviation. Since the automakers flew to D.C. In November of 2008, the image of business aviation certainly became a false image in the minds of many Americans, also many policymakers. So NBA, working with Gamma, developed the No Play, No Gain campaign, or relaunched that campaign, which is really something that's different than what it was before. And it is a blended media campaign that's intended to get across four very key messages. And it's important not only for policymakers and others to understand those key messages, but for folks within our industry to understand those as well. So those four key points that we emphasize through No Play, No Gain are really the hallmark of business aviation and what we're about. Business aviation means millions of highly skilled jobs. It's 1.2 million jobs. Jobs that are important to our country. We also contribute as an industry $150 billion annually to U.S. economic output. Secondly, business aviation provides a lifeline to communities across the country. We all know in the industry that there are about 500 airports that have some level of commercial airline service. And in the last year to 18 months, about 100 cities across America saw a decline in scheduled commercial airline service. And moreover, about 30 communities lost airline service entirely. Business aviation operates into over 5,000 airports across the United States, and the airports that are located near the factories, near the office buildings in communities all over the country. So that leads to the next point, of course, that business aviation is an efficiency and productivity tool, and that's for tens of thousands of businesses. And finally, and very, very importantly, business aviation is a lifesaver for people in need. In the industry, we know how much great work we do with organizations like Corporate Angel Network, the fantastic work that was done by the industry with the earthquake relief in Haiti. Stories like that, flights like that happen every single day, and it's somewhat a well-kept secret within our industry, but it's a great story that we need to be telling. And if we don't tell the story, what's going to happen is that policymakers, the media, other folks who influence the direction, influence legislation, are not going to view our industry as an important industry, as an essential industry, as one that contributes to the society. And if they don't view it that way, they will make decisions that will be harmful and perhaps could even kill our industry. That goes from Capitol Hill all the way through the administrative branches of the federal government. So issues like user fees or environmental issues or the large aircraft security program, if we're viewed as an industry that is irrelevant, that's in the way, they're going to treat us that way from a legislative and regulatory perspective. And that's something that we certainly need to work hard as an industry all together to tell the good story about business aviation.
I think I've got a caller from Philadelphia who'd like to ask a question. Hold on one second. Ken?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes. Where are you from?
I'm calling from Bala Cynwyd, Pennsylvania.
And, of course, the first-time caller because we haven't had any before.
The question I have is, why should shareholders see value in using corporate aircraft?
Ken, that's a great question. Last year, NBAA and Gamma, under the No Play, No Gain campaign, worked with a company called Nexa Advisors to do a study of business aviation, and they looked at companies that use business aviation versus those that do not use business aviation. Last year, they focused on the S&P 500 since the data was readily available for those companies. And what they proved through methodical study is that companies that use business aviation outperform their competitors in key financial and non-financial metrics across the board. So the companies that use business aviation are leading companies. The business aircraft is a strategic tool that's used by companies to get ahead, to advance their leapfrog their competitors, that they're able to be more productive, more efficient, and more profitable. So the takeaway from this is that business aviation is the sign of a well-managed company. You see a company using business aviation, it's a well-managed company. Now, of course, there have to be protocols in place, policies, procedures. The company needs to be using the aircraft in line with its company's strategic plan, and it really needs to be that workhorse that it is. But companies use business tools all the time to enhance their productivity and their efficiency, and business aviation is another tool that companies can use when it makes sense to use it.
Ken, thanks for your call. Let's go to another caller. We're not screening at the moment, so we'll just take the calls as they come. Ken, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Let's see.
I think Stuart had promised to give a $100 gift certificate on legal fees for all first-time callers, right?
Thanks. Appreciate that. Let's see. We're going to take somebody from. From Miami. Hi, you're on Plain Talk Radio. Do you have a question for our guest? No. Try one more. Hello, you're on Plain Talk Radio. Do you have a question for one of our guests? Okay, let's move on. Some other good things I think have developed recently, Mike. Maybe we can touch on a few of those. There were revisions to the tax law relating to certain deductions that companies can take with respect to their aircraft. And I also want to touch upon the personal use reinterpretation that is hopefully going to come out or be at least formally released soon.
Sure. So the first one you're mentioning, Stuart, is the issue of bonus depreciation or accelerated depreciation. The term bonus, which is what's used here in Washington and throughout the manufacturing industry, is a bit of a misnomer because you don't get to depreciate anything more than the value of the asset, but you get to accelerate that depreciation. So it's a bonus in the first year. So companies that are looking to acquire new equipment this year may be eligible for this bonus depreciation, where in the first year you would depreciate 50% of the value of the asset in addition to the normal depreciation schedule that would follow. So an aircraft under Part 91 that would use normally the what's called the modified accelerated cost recovery system or maker's depreciation would do 50% of the value, then the normal 20% in the first year. So in essence, it's 60% of the value of the asset. So that makes a huge difference for companies that may be thinking about acquiring a new aircraft, and that may be a strong incentive for them. And in fact, talking to folks in the aircraft sales business, it has been a strong incentive, and they've been fielding a lot of phone calls from companies that are interested in making that investment in 2010 rather than waiting until the future.
And I think in terms of some of the inventory that aircraft manufacturers might still have of white tails or aircraft that are pretty much specced out, but perhaps the buyers dropped off in the last year or so, hopefully that'll help with that level of inventory. And so there probably are, unlike several years ago where there were no new aircraft that you could buy because they were all, at least a couple years out from construction, there might be some aircraft that actually you can acquire within the next year or so.
That's exactly right. That's a big part of the reason why this was a big legislative priority for NBAA, and we've worked aggressively with other organizations, including manufacturing organizations like NAMA, National Association of Manufacturers. There are about 80 or so organizations in Washington that worked aggressively on seeing this through.
And I think with respect to the 179 deduction, that doesn't require that the property that you're acquiring is new. So I think for, buyers of smaller aircraft, that it might stimulate some of the pre-owned sales with the smaller aircraft. Obviously, there's a limit of $500,000 on that particular deduction.
That's exactly right. And folks should also remember that it's not only for aircraft, but there may be other investments that would make sense from a business aviation perspective. It could be new avionics, other types of upgrades that will extend the life of the asset you already have.
And finally, I want to talk a little bit about the reinterpretation of the Schwab opinion. Not quite a reinterpretation, but just for everybody's just to bring everyone up to speed. Many years ago, Charles Schwab submitted a request for interpretation, asking that the personal use of his aircraft that he be allowed to reimburse for for the personal use of his aircraft based upon the exemption in 91501B5. And the FAA came back and said, well, because that particular transportation is not within the scope of an incidental to the business of the company, that he could not do a fully allocated cost reimbursement to the company for those flights. So he wanted to do that. And we've had, obviously, many, many clients who call us and don't understand the counterintuitive nature of the rules. Many CEOs who call and say, but I want to reimburse the company. I want to pay for the transportation. I don't want it to be an item on the proxy statement. I don't want it to be an item that the shareholders can be upset about. I want to pay for it. And generally speaking, there are very limited ways to do that, and the limited ways that are available do not necessarily reimburse the company for the entire cost of that transportation. Mike, tell us a little bit about the work that NBAA did and the proposed interpretation that we hopefully will be finalized sometime soon.
Yeah, Stuart, you characterized it exactly right. There are executives who want to pay for non-business flights on the aircraft but simply cannot do so because of FAA regulation and policy. And that regulation and policy exists for a reason. The FAA doesn't want non-commercial operators to be conducting flights for hire and essentially bypass the Part 119 and 135 regulatory requirements of a commercial operation. So that all makes sense. But the reality is that these executives who are allowed to use the aircraft for non-business reasons are folks who are working for the company all the time. They are really on the clock. They're thinking about the company all the time. They're on call all the time. They can be and are called back on a moment's notice when something is taking place. So we worked with the FAA, the folks in the counsel's office, on further educating the role of the executive, how they utilize business aviation, what is happening en route. And the FAA came to a common understanding with business aviation industry in that these executives, not just anybody in the company, but certain people who are so important to the business of the company that could be called back on a moment's notice, that type of flying, that non-business, what would normally be considered a non-business flight is really a flight that is incidental to and within the scope of the business of the company. So in these very limited circumstances, executives that are named by the board of directors through a board-approved resolution or some sort of aircraft use policy, named as so integral to the company that they may be called back for whatever the business of the company is, that when they use the aircraft for personal reasons, they would be able to reimburse the company up to the amount in 91501B5, which is the fully allocated cost of owning and operating the aircraft. That's significantly greater than what exists today, which in essence for most folks is the time-sharing agreement. So we see this as a very positive move. The FAA responded to an official interpretation request that NBA submitted in March of 2010. They published in the Federal Register a proposed interpretation that is very much in line with what I just outlined. And we expect that perhaps later this year or in early 2011 we'll see the final interpretation. We don't expect it to be greatly different than what was published in the Federal Register earlier this year over the summertime. However, it's important to note that this is not a change in policy yet. It's something that the FAA is considering. It is not something people can take advantage of today. The limitations are still in place today.
Great. Well, thanks, Mike. Frank, let's turn to you for a moment. Over the last few months, we've seen the FAA move at what can only be called lightning speed on a few issues that, frankly, came out of the blue for some of us, at least one of which just plain stopped certain transactions in their tracks. Could you review for us a few of those?
Sure. It's lightning speed for government, that is. It's not so much for the rest of the world. I think the one that certainly stopped everybody in their tracks was this new position that the FAA took for briefly and then withdrew on the use of non-citizen trusts for registration purposes. And then the other issue is the new rule on re-registration and renewal of registration of aircraft. We'll get to that. On the non-citizen trusts, 30-second background, which is one of the options that a party has to register aircraft, is to register the aircraft in the name of an owner trustee pursuant to a trust agreement. That's been used for decades. Tens of thousands of aircraft have been registered that way. And the one that came to the FAA's attention was ones were trusts that were established for the benefit of a non-citizen, which is most of the trusts, because that's a vehicle that people use to register the aircraft in the United States. So that you've got an owner trustee who's a U.S. citizen, takes title of the aircraft for the benefit of a third party who is, in this case, a non-citizen. The FAA's approved these trusts for, again, decades. It's a regulatory, it's contemplated in the regulations. There are written opinions by the FAA. But last spring, the FAA counsel's office came out, met with the Oklahoma City Bar on Aviation Bar, and basically said, we're going to issue a new opinion that now says this is no longer a valid method of registration if the aircraft will be given, if operational control of the aircraft will be given to this non-citizen beneficiary or an affiliate. And that stopped lots of deals in their tracks and lots of financing transactions, got the attention of the industry. There was a great deal of movement within the industry and activity that ultimately culminated in a meeting with industry leaders and the FAA, where the FAA agreed that they would not institute a change of policy, but would study the policy and would get back with us. So it's still, even though the FAA issued a written letter saying we're not changing our policy and we're going back to our old policy, there's still some doubt about that. If you go to the counsel's office to get an opinion that blesses one of these trusts and you disclose the use of the aircraft and the operation of the aircraft, you get an opinion that says the trust is okay, but you don't get an opinion that says the structure or the use of the aircraft is okay. And so there's, you've got that aspect of it. The FAA is clearly, and they've told us, they've told people publicly that they are still reviewing this issue, and they don't really know what position they're going to take, or at least the position they're going to take hasn't been made public. But they're reviewing it. We know that certainly there are parts of the FAA that still want to make a change in the policy, that other parts of the FAA that think the policy's fine. So it's really up in the air. People need to pay attention. We had a meeting with the NBAA, arranged a meeting with some folks in the industry and high levels of people at the FAA, where there were some assurances given that no activity, no action would be taken without consulting the industry, that a new NPRM would not be made until the industry was consulted, even a new interpretation would not be made until the industry was consulted. So that gave us a great deal of comfort, but I've talked to some other folks in the FAA who say, you know, we're moving forward on this. So, again, you just have to pay attention. The industry needs to be focused on this to make sure that the FAA doesn't take any action that would adversely affect the industry, because this is an important part of many people's transactions, whether it's a manufacturer that allows somebody to register an aircraft at delivery so that the aircraft can be moved, whether a lender prefers U.S. registration, whether for operational purposes an aircraft should be registered in the United States. Lots of reasons, good reasons to register the aircraft in the United States, and this would be a huge blow to the industry, and especially the financing industry and the manufacturers, if they change this policy.
I think also, you know, here in South Florida at least, we see a number of buyers from South America, and it's a fairly common way to register their aircraft. They are compliant generally and want to be compliant, and this was something that I know I had a difficult time explaining in
right.
terms of the reasons, because we didn't really get reasons when this all blew up. You know, people are scratching their heads. I know some people who started looking at, you know, the Isle of Man and the Caymans and some of the other jurisdictions. Obviously, people want U.S. registration for a variety of reasons, including, you know, maintaining their market value,
mm-hmm.
maintenance, and some other legitimate reasons. You know, I wonder if we're hitting a fly with a hammer with this one.
Yeah, and I think those are important issues, and I think that to the extent the FAA is listening, and I hope they are, I want to point out, I think that this concept, here's kind of the basis of the concept, is that regulation talks about the trustee has to basically maintain control of the trust. The trustee has to make assert its discretion in connection with the management of the trust. That's fine. The FAA is confusing that, though, by saying that if the trustee gives possession and control of the aircraft to a third party, that the trustee is not exercising its discretion that it has to exercise under the regulation. And so they're confusing, you know, operating the aircraft and decisions being made in connection with operating the aircraft with decisions that are being made as a trustee in its control of the trust. And it's certainly reasonable, and it's done all the time, for a trustee to look at the facts and circumstances of any kind of trust and say, the best use of this asset is for this asset to be, control this asset to be given to the beneficiary of the trust to use the asset in their business or for economic gain. So, you know, there's really not a problem with the regulation and the way that it's being used in the industry, but the FAA is confusing operation of the aircraft with management of the trust, and I think ultimately, hopefully, that distinction will win the day and we'll be able to keep this use. And, you know, like you say, there's lots of legitimate reasons to register the aircraft in the United States. We went over a few of them. We've got a memo that lists about three pages of them. But among other things, it's a good thing to have U.S. registration. It's a good thing to have an aircraft that is maintained to U.S. Standards and to have oversight by the FAA. So that kind of that's in the short time we have, I think that addresses it, unless you have any other questions on it.
And then I think we've got aircraft re-registration, which is something new.
We do have aircraft re-registration, much to the chagrin of everyone. you know, from the beginning of time of aircraft until October 1 of this year, once you register an aircraft in your name, you didn't have to worry about it expiring. It was good for as long as you owned the aircraft. For a lot of reasons, that the FAA, the main one being that one of the FAA's jobs, talking about the Civil Aviation Registry in Oklahoma City, is to maintain accurate records with regard to the registration of aircraft in the United States. They looked at the records, and these are kind of numbers a little off, but basically they're a little over 300,000 aircraft registered in the United States, and they determined through unclear Ouija boards or analysis of some kind that about a third of those registrations are probably not valid. They're old planes that have been destroyed, they're planes that have been exported without proper deregistration, et cetera. And so, you know, their job is to maintain accurate records, and so I understand that. So there would have been lots of different ways to maintain accurate records. They were all the efficient ones were rejected, and the plan of the FAA was to cause every owner of an aircraft to re-register their aircraft over a three-year period, and then after an aircraft has been registered, they have to renew the registration every 3 years. So after October 1, 2010, every certificate of registration now basically has a three-year lifespan, and your registration expires after 3 years. And you have to go through a process to get it either re-registered now for anything that was registered prior to October 1 of 2010, and anything registered after October 1, 2010, you have to, in 3 years, have to go get it renewed.
You know, there are a couple points to make. There are a couple points I think to make here, which is if your registration certificate has the wrong address on it now,
right?
The notice from the FAA is going to go to the wrong place.
Right.
I think that's pretty clear. So people ought to probably check their check the addresses that are on their registrations, and you know, before you go on the FAA website or before you submit a change to the address, you know, check with whoever did your planning. Make sure that the change of that address isn't going to affect whatever planning was done in connection with the acquisition of the aircraft. Because I know certainly in some states, revenue departments and whatnot are checking daily as to new aircraft with their zip codes. So I would suggest that they do that. And secondly, I think from what I can tell of the rule, I mean, the re-registration can actually be done online.
Right. As long as you're timely in your application to re-register, you can go online at the FAA's website, confirm that everything is correct by your address and the description of the aircraft and the owner. If that's all correct, we'll be able to just basically click a button that says it's correct, pay by credit card, and you'll be done. Now, to go online, you have to have received a notice from the FAA that a re-registration is due, and the FAA, in that notice, will give you a code that will allow you to go online. Without the code, you can't go online. You'll have to file paper application.
Right. Well, thanks, Frank. Appreciate the update. We're going to get back to Mike and Frank about the NBAA tax conference shortly, and there's a joint aircraft registration seminar coming up. Let's turn to Peter Fleiss of the Corporate Angel Network. Peter, tell us something about the Corporate Angel Network and how you got started and what it is you're doing.
Hi, Stuart. Thanks for the opportunity to help us spread the word. Corporate Angel Network is a 501c3 and a public charity that arranges free flights for cancer patients to treatment using empty seats on business aircraft. Since our founding in 1981, we've grown to include more than 500 participating corporations, major corporations, including half of the Fortune 100 and a lot of the Fortune 500. We have a paid staff of 6 and a team of 50 part-time volunteers who work with patients, physicians, corporate flight departments, and leading treatment centers to coordinate the medical travel needs of cancer patients with the scheduled flight activity of our participating corporation. We fly more than 250 patients a month. In July, we flew an all-time record of 307 patients. And recently, we flew our 35,000th cancer patient to treatment. We've received numerous awards in recognition of our service, and that includes the Volunteer Action Award, which is the highest volunteer award from the President of the United States. CAN started in 1981. A pilot named Pat Blum, who was recovering from cancer and had to travel long distances for treatment, would fly into Westchester County Airport and see all of these corporate flights coming in with one or two or three people, and she started thinking about the empty seats and couldn't they be filled with cancer patients who need to go to the same locations that the corporations were flying to. And she got together with a cancer recoverer named Jay Weinberg, and they went to Leonard Green, who was the founder of Safe Flight Instrument Corporation, and he loved the idea. He'd lost a wife to cancer a few years before, and he donated a foundation that he had and all the money in it and his contacts and was on the board for years, and that's how Corporate Angel Network got going.
And is there I know you've got something coming up at NBAA. You want to tell us all about that?
Right. NBAA has been a strong and long-time supporter of ours, and I'd like to say that this No Plane, No Gain initiative of NBAA and Gamma has really been instrumental to us, because in 2008, when the auto executives went before Congress and really didn't have, I'm sure they had them, but they didn't express the proper answers to the questions, and all of a sudden corporate aviation was a bad word, and the press was looking all over for negative stories. We lost a lot of corporations, big major corporations, who closed down their flight departments or merged or whatever,
you lost them because they didn't have airplanes anymore.
We also lost temporarily a lot of them who decided not to fly. They kept their airplanes, or they put them up for sale at a high price so that they wouldn't get sold, but they could say they were for sale, and they just curtailed or eliminated their flying, and certainly empty seats for our patients. And the work that No Plane, No Gain has done in educating legislators and the country has made a big difference, and companies are more comfortable now signing up with us and flying our patients. So our numbers this year were up about 35% above our numbers last year, which is remarkable, I think. And in addition, the numbers are higher than they've ever been. So, and we attribute No Plane, No Gain to a lot of that. Now, NBAA has been a strong and longtime supporter of Corporate Angel Network in numerous ways. But last year, they decided that the gala that they have every year which is always well attended, should become a charity event as well. And so they renamed it NBAA Can Charity Benefit, and they brought in a professional auctioneer, a guy named Spanky, who's entertainment in himself. He's terrific. And went out and got donations from a lot of aviation-related companies and some that weren't, and raised $168,000 for us, which was remarkable. More important than that, as important as the money is, and it always is, but more important than that, we got a lot of exposure out of that, and the number of companies signed up and are flying more patients now, and you know, part of that helps that helps us help more cancer patients.
Offering to provide transportation on the aircraft, is there a way that people can contribute?
There are a couple of different ways. Of course, funds can always be contributed, and if you go to our website, corpangelnetwork.org, right on the home page, there's a little icon that says donate here. But we also have an account with NetJets. NetJets has given us an account, and they're fractional owners. Quite a few of them will donate 1 hour or 3 hours or 10 hours or sometimes even more into that account. And then we can use that account. We can use those hours as if we had bought and paid for them. Flight Options also donates hours to us, and we have a working relationship with Citation Air, and now we're talking to other fractional owners where their owners can donate. And by the way, when I talked about the NBAA Can Charity Benefit for last year, they're doing the same thing this year. So anybody who's out there that's interested in going and having a good time, and it is a good time, should take a look at that.
Go ahead, Mike.
I was going to say, tickets are still available for the CAN charity benefit. So if folks want to purchase a ticket, they can do so on-site in Atlanta at the registration desk.
Great.
So just to let you know, we've got about, it looks like we've got at least 20 people in the chat room. We've got 11 total callers, many of them, all of them, not with their hands up. So I'm not bringing them on the air because I don't think they want it to be brought on the air. Let me ask Mike to about the NBAA Tax and Regulatory Conference going starting on Sunday. Got about a minute or two left for that, and then we're going to have to finish up the first show. Mike?
All right. Well, the NBAA Tax Committee puts on a conference each year to educate the industry on a lot of current developments in the tax and FAA regulatory arena, also DOT as well, and then covers important topics related to aviation insurance and other risk management topics. This is a must-attend for flight department managers, chief pilots, others who are responsible for regulatory and interfacing with the finance and tax folks in their companies, but also for their advisors, other lawyers, CPAs, insurance brokers, anybody involved in the art of an aircraft transaction, things of that nature. So this is done Sunday, Monday in Atlanta. So it'll be October 17th and 18th. It'll be at the Georgia World Congress Center. We have about 200 people registered for this conference. So it's, a strong attendance, strong showing. That's reflective of the interest in compliance that we have in the industry, and I'm thrilled about that.
Great. And, Let me pose a question to all of you. There really hasn't been a public forum like this show to expose business aviation and the benefits that companies get from it. I wonder if there's some fear that if the public knew what went on in business aviation, there'd be some kind of an uproar. Of course that's not true. What we need to do is be so transparent to the public and to the press. I think it'll be obvious to the public and the press that business aviation is not a code word for excess, but rather a code for productivity. On this show, we're going to attempt to create that transparency and, like a mirror, give everyone an inside look at business aviation, the wonderful people who work in the industry, the generosity of the owners, and the reason why U.S. businesses are more productive with it than without it. I think it would be great if a shareholder would stand up at a public public company's annual meeting one day and say, excuse me, Mr. CEO, but is there some reason why the company doesn't have an aircraft? I mean, our competitors have them. They've been beating the company's brains in on deals getting done. Don't we pay you to be available at all times? Shouldn't you be making deals and talking to other executives about confidential strategies in a confidential atmosphere? I don't think that you can do that on the airlines, can you? I mean, that's what I think we'd all like to hear one day. It seems to me that the metrics that are out there to measure productivity of a company with an aircraft, the one without one, should be easy to convince the public of the importance of business aircraft as a tool and not as an eccentricity. I want to thank you for joining in to the premier broadcast of Plain Talk Radio. I hope you found it enjoyable. Remember, the show can be accessed at a later date or shared from the webpage. I want to thank my guests for appearing on the show, Mike Nichols of NBAA, Frank Polk, McAfee and Taft in Oklahoma City, and Peter Fleiss of the Corporate Angel Network. Frank, Mike, one last time, how can someone learn more about NBA or the tax conference? What website should they go to?
Go to nba.org for the tax conference, do /events, and it's one of the top items listed there. But also check out www.noplanenogain.org for a wealth of information and resources that will help you articulate the value of your business aircraft to your company.
Frank, you'll be at NBAA speaking at the seminar, I know, and generally hanging around.
I will be, and I recommend that people go to the No Plane, No Gain website, too. It's just got great information to back up a lot of the arguments and discussions we've had on the benefit of business aviation.
And, Peter, to make contributions or to learn more about Corporate Angel Network, your website again?
CorpAngelNetwork.org, or you can just do Corporate Angel Network Google search. It'll take you right there. I'd also, Stuart, like to thank you and let everybody know that you generously donate money to Corporate Angel Network every time you close an aircraft sale, and we really appreciate that.
Sure. We look forward to our next show. Invite you to listen in. Think you'll enjoy it. We'll be at NBAA for the convention next week, interviewing some of the attendees, which will be taped for broadcast. So we hope you'll listen in to the next broadcast, which will give us a sense of the state of the markets and new developments. Be a lot of fun. If you have a new product or service, again, drop us a note at airplaneguy@plaintalkradio.com, and we'll try to maybe do a little interview. We'll do some sound bites next time we have our show. This is Stuart Lapioca, the host of Plain Talk Radio, October 14, 2010, signing off for now. Fly safely. Don't take advice from the golf course about business aviation. Have a great afternoon, everyone. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Stuart.
Thank you.
Take care.